I don't get upset with the shot because once the ball is hit or struck with the club, you have no control over what's going to happen next. Number one, you have to be better. You just have to get better at what you do every day. It just can't be result oriented. This is a very result oriented game. People ask, oh, well, you know, I really have putters. I have two putters, one for long, one for short. Great. Good for you. If that works,
yeah,
go for it.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Well, I know you as Tyler Fitzel. I imagine a lot of people on Instagram know you as the Wedge Magician.
The Wedge Magician approves is really what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's all over all the Minnesota stuff, and everybody sees it. How long has that been a bit?
2020.
So about 6 years now. It's a good bit.
It is. One of the things that I wanted to do with that was it was during an election year. So I'll walk you back on where that came from. We're out at, Peisinger. And then,
Shout out to Zinger, by the way, one of the most loyal listeners of the pod.
He'll critique this, and the first thing he'll do is text me like, well, you sounded like this. You should have said this. Why did you say that?
You got to have constructive feedback to be able to get better and grow.
Right on.
So we'll take it.
Totally. I was out there with JP as well, James Patrick.
Yep.
And we were kind of, it was a trip, but it was also doing some testing for him. He's got his new wedge lineup. This is, 6 years ago. So he's got his premier lineup and he's kind of, let's test this. Let's take pictures and such. And we were just thinking of the ideas is like, okay, wedges and what do we do? And on the one hole, we're sitting there, he's taking a bunch of pictures and I'm just kind of chipping. And I hit on a par three. It was on, pretty sure it was on Sheep Ranch too, is where we took that picture.
Ooh, back when you could get on there without it being 2 years in advance.
I know. So, I hit a wedge up there and he's just like, dude, wedge magician. And so, we actually grabbed, names like that. So, like the wedge underscore magician underscore things like that. But the tagline came in because, it was the election year and, all of the, advertisements that you hear at the time are all like, I approve this message.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it was. I will only comment the Wedge Magician approves on something if I approve it.
Yeah.
That kind of came from another piece later on too, when, I do my stuff for Second Swing and I'm on podcasts, like, their podcasts, mm-hmm. or video stuff. And that is another story where, people ask me all the time, so how are you doing? And I say, razor sharp, keep your grooves clean, stay razor sharp. That's another story. I don't need to get into it, but it was kind of the same thing with, I just tied the wedges in like, all right, keep the grooves clean and stay razor sharp. So
you've seen a pretty crazy evolution of Second Swing too. Cause do you remember the first time we met?
Well, it would have been in the Minneapolis store.
That's true.
Because that's where I started.
Mm-hmm.
And even on top of that, like at that point, Minnetonka and Minneapolis were the only two stores. And so I came aboard in the spring, I think of 16. I'm just past 10 years already.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
Decade of service.
Yeah. I'll get a watch for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An Omega.
So one of the things that I remember about that is that the Scottsdale location had just opened up and it was a different location for them, but they had opened up and there was people that were kind of going down there, helping out, getting it open and whatnot. But like we were kind of full traction, full steam, Minneapolis and Minnetonka, and the online was huge. And since then, it's not just the evolution, right? So we opened a couple out east. So we've got Columbia Wilmington, took at Wilmington, Delaware, and the Columbia, Maryland. Then we opened one in
Dallas.
The Dallas one. I'm trying to think. We moved. I think we moved Scottsdale's location south across from Talking Stick into a gigantic
I've been down there. It's a beautiful location. Yeah. It is awesome.
Yeah, and it's really well done. And I would say that that's probably the game plan, you know, that has kind of been followed for future versions of it. So like Dallas is really about what we did really well in Scottsdale, and now what are we going to do going forward? So Scottsdale goes forward. We get Dallas now, which is in the north side in the colony, and then we end up pretty soon here opening a location in West Palm Beach.
Sweet.
Yeah. And so kind of our dip into Florida, we hear it all the time, like, why aren't you in Florida? Well, it takes time. It's not something you can rush. You want to do it right. You have to find the right location, no matter where you are. So that's number one. And it takes time to just go through and find the right people. We got to stock inventory. I mean, I look at it and I say, yeah, we have almost 200,000 clubs for sale on secondswing.com, but they're not all sitting in a warehouse. They're in stores too.
Yeah, sure.
So one of the things that we want to be able to do is fill that out. Like Florida not only just becomes a store, it becomes a shipping area too, right? Like we can start to service better in the Southeast region.
Yeah.
Where like Dallas and Scottsdale can really hit a lot more of the West or the Central.
Yeah. It's been pretty cool to watch. Cause I still remember our fitting. It was probably 2018. I don't think I had joined Southview Country Club yet, but I was getting ready to. And that's like when I started to really get into the sport. And you were my first fitting I had ever done. My first ever golf fitting was with you. And it was at the Minneapolis, when you had to go next door to the tour van.
Yeah.
Back in those days. And
you came back.
I've come back a few times since, at multiple locations. But I was getting fit for wedges, ironically.
Yeah.
And we got fit into some Mizuno wedges that I played for a couple of years going into Southview, and here we are now.
And I'm not going to downplay Mizuno, but I thought some of the wedges, like what you had back then, were incredible.
Yeah, we were matching them to the set because I had just gotten into my first real set of clubs because I was starting to really get into it. And so we just matched the wedges with the set, and you kind of gave me a mini lesson there. I was like, can I get a lesson from you? Not really, but if you come get fit, I'm happy to give you
advice.
Tips and stuff. And so I frequented there. And then when we moved out west, now I come to Minnetonka and you move out to the Minnetonka location. And here we are. Now I got a podcast. It's pretty crazy.
Well, that was the cool thing. Cause when you started this up, you're like, hey, I got this podcast I'm going to do. And you did. And the evolution of the podcast, not just Second Swing, but just talk about the evolution of the podcast. It's you get people that really, they're looking for information out there. Right. There's a lot of different opinions. And so a lot of what I have to say is just kind of my version of it.
Yeah.
And when you have people on, it's the same thing. It's like, you've had a lot of great people on, and I love listening to it because personally, do I know a guy like Andrew McCain? Yeah. I've known Andrew for a long time. There's a wealth of knowledge there. And, I listen to him on what he does at the tour level because he's been to that level. He plays at that level. Just some of the players and the coaches around here too, as you start talking about the professional level, you had, Jennifer Huber on.
And yeah.
I mean, talk about, LPGA player, did that for a little while, got into teaching. I can tell you without hesitation, she's in the best spot possible at Hazeltine, as a teacher now too, because she's on with the KPMG. She's got, I don't know how many different videos. I'm watching videos. They bring her onto the Golf Channel. They bring her onto, NBC broadcasting. They do a podcast here, there. She's great at it. Right. But she's just a great teacher. She really cares about her players, and her players aren't just Hazeltine members. She's got this great, span of all these players that she's working with.
Yeah.
So great perspective too.
Yeah, it's been, I was talking to my parents about this the other day, because it's been just kind of crazy, because my dad saw I had Adam Thielen on. Mm-hmm. We were talking about potentially some guests coming up in the future as well, and it's, like never would have guessed however many years ago when the thing started that, like, fast forward, I've had on like PGA Tour caddies, and I still haven't had a like top 100 player. Hopefully that's coming soon, but to still have like professional athletes or people that have been at the top of their sport and like now love the game and haven't like talking to those people and hearing like what's in their mind and their brain and how they approach this sport from the perspective and experience they've had and in previous sports that they've played at the highest level. I just, yeah, sometimes I look back and go, man, this has been pretty cool. Like, this has been pretty sweet hobby to have evolve and get this far.
Yeah, totally. One of the things, I've worked with Adam a couple times, so he's got basically what's in his bag right now is stuff that we worked on to get into his bag. And it was really cool because talking to him, like with irons and what he was doing and how he's doing it, like, he'd said, well, you know, he's kind of like real forward as in like leaning forward kind of, in his swing. He's really kind of out on his toes. And I'm like, eh, we don't want to be too far out on that. Just looking at the swing part. And he goes, well, you got to realize I spent my entire career getting on my toes at the line of scrimmage. So you think about basically every single day, you're trying to get in a position that you can move with power. You can move like on your route running. And I'm thinking, well, that's not great in golf, but how does that change? And he's working swing wise with Justin Kraft. Great.
Okay.
Great,
yeah.
Great coach.
Yeah. Crafty's awesome. Crafty. Also been on the pod twice.
Yeah.
Great dude.
And like, so I don't know what they're doing with it, but I know the next time I saw him, like he wasn't on his toes and I'm going, man, this is a different ball game.
Yeah. And how quickly those, you know, guys and gals that have played whatever sport, whether it's golf or something else at that elite level can learn.
Yep.
Right. And get really good at something that is really phenomenal. It's why all of them end up being really good players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick Helling at Winsong all the time. I threw him and what he's doing in the pro league who I've talked to some people with and like all the folks he's graciously connected me with and that I've played with.
Yeah.
All phenomenal players. Yeah. Like no matter what they play, it's just like they're all really, really good golfers and have turned their athletic abilities into being good at golf. It's crazy.
I think anyone that wants to play to whatever level you want to play to, if you want to be better, there's two things that you have to do. Number one, you have to be better. You just have to get better at what you do every day.
Yeah.
It just can't be result oriented. This is a very result oriented game. I would say paramount to doing that is getting into a routine, is that making the lead up to that shot in and of itself, something that you've practiced. So you there's no really elite player that gets up over a shot and goes, well, never done this before. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, but as I talk about myself as an amateur golfer, yeah, I played well. I was really good for a long time, but now I get out and I'm consistent simply because I'm not thinking about what I have to do. It's just a part of the routine. Like I grip the club the specific way. I make a couple of waggles. I go. And for me, like I found, and this is more that maybe peace and calm later on, I don't get upset with the shot because once the ball is hit or struck with the club, you have no control over what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
All the control is gone. You only get control with that club up until that impact point. And so once that happens, I like to tell people in fittings, once the contact has happened, the environment takes over. You know, it could be wind, it could be hot, it could be cold, it could be the tree that you just hit into, you know. But you step up with a plan, execute, and see what happens.
Well, so I kind of want to talk about Adam then. Like, so from the equipment perspective and like actually diving into like the fitting aspect here. Obviously you've been doing this for a long time and everybody that's listening, you know, at this point still following along with Member Guest knows that anytime we have somebody on from Second Swing, like we get to dive into equipment. We get to dive into the things that, you know, I believe are the like small little details that you can control that end up making you better, right? Like it's one of the first things whenever because I get people that ask me all the time, how did you go from A to B to C and like where you're at. And like, I usually walk them through kind of all this stuff. If I could write a book on it, I could of all the things that I would change. But I always go back to you have to get fit, like no matter what level you're at, and just know like it's going to change as you get a little bit better and better and better and all those things. When you're fitting somebody like that or at that level where they're kind of in that like single digit handicap range and like now going to get to call it plus or beyond.
Yeah.
Are you looking at it more from like actually fitting to the player and their athletic ability, or is it more of a, like, are you fitting to, well, you're at this level and you want to get to this level. Is this more of a equipment, or here's the things that you should be playing, like that we see really good players at this level do, right? Because I right. like, if you look at anybody that's a call it zero or better, you are going to see a lot of consistencies in the way that they yeah. build a bag compared to somebody that is, you know, maybe a high single digit handicap or above. Like there just are going to be differences in the way that that bag is built.
Right. I would say that for the most part, I look at myself as someone who needs to figure out what tool you need, right? So you're the, I can help you with tool. The other side of it is like, you're going to be the artist. You're going to be the craftsman, right? You got to go use that tool. So from a fitting sense, I think what we see out of better players, well, number one, you see much, 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 much better short game. That's number one. Like if you want to do anything in this game, if you're ever going to advance yourself, it's going to be in the short game. It's not going to be with the driver. There's tons of guys that can hit the driver really long.
And when you say short game, just so I make sure we set what we're about to talk about,
yeah.
are you talking 100 and in, or are you talking like 30 and in?
I could call it either one. I would basically say whatever club that you're that is comfortable for you, so you can, if I have a club in my hand and I can go at any flag, that's what I consider short game. So for you right now,
gotcha. You said, I follow.
Yeah. If you said like, I'm confident enough that I can go at anything with an 8 iron and below. Right. And professionals usually can go at it with a 3 wood and below.
Sure.
Right? There's yeah. there's a level at which,
yeah.
you know, I always kind of think about like, it's the Justin Thomas when he set the scoring record at Erin Hills. He's on Saturday and he's on 18. I think, yeah, he's 18. He's got a 290, like 295 carry. He's like, well, I don't think I can hit my 5 wood this way, but he just swings as hard as he could. And what's he do? He carries it like 293. It stops, you know, 8 feet away and he makes the eagle and sets the scoring record. Like that's maybe a unique situation, but he at 290 yards, like he's looking at getting it close. I couldn't even carry the junk at that point.
Yeah, like imagine hitting a shot like that.
Exactly. So I think that's what I mean by like the short game.
So then generally is probably somebody thinking about 100 yards in. Like I would say yeah. most scratch players when they've got
yeah
54 degree wedge or maybe yeah. lower, like around that 100 yards are like, I can take dead aim at this flag yes. so long as it's not tucked 3 and 3 somewhere no, and I'm trying no. to hit it close.
I think it's even like that. Like there's a big difference, right? When you look at the type of play that happens at an elite level, and obviously we always want to look at the PGA Tour because it's the elite level. We look at the majors, you know. If you're out playing with your guys, and I like you're at Windsong, how far away can you get on number one where that flag is basically tucked right behind the bunker?
How far away can I get?
Where you feel comfortable going at that thing
oh. with
no problem.
I mean, probably 120 would be my max yeah. that I would yeah. go after it. Like once I get my set wedge in there, so my pitching wedge for me, that's which is like 130 to 135 yard yeah. club, I'm no longer taking dead aim, but like yeah. I've taken dead aim at it all the way back right from 120 and I know it can't go long right. and I just feel comfortable hitting that shot.
And then on top of that, what ends up happening though is you look at it and you say, all right, I'm not worried whether it does its job or not. So let's say, for instance, now all of a sudden you're a little short, you're in that bunker and you don't have a lot of green to work with. All right. Now, are you confident enough that you can do that shot?
Yeah.
Or if it goes off to the right, or if it goes really long, or, you know, if you get into a situation where it's not going to be about the result, it's going to be about the process. So you're going to get in, you're going to make that shot, and then you're going to have to live with the results no matter what. You're just going to have to. So I look at the short game as being how far away can I get where I can't take just straight dead aim at that flag? no matter where it is, no matter what it is. And it's not what I do. It's like I watch these professionals where they get a little leery with their wedges at, you know, 80 yards. Like, what am I going to do? Well, a guy like Scottie Scheffler is never, you know, worried about 80 yards. He's just like, let's go. So I think that, you know, in a fitting sense, that defines it. I also look at that as the routine, right? So if you are, a lot of times people will come in from a fitting and they'll come into a fitting and they're just, well, I'm really not consistent. My swing's all over. I hit the ball all over the place. Yeah, but if you allow yourself to hit the ball, like, do you have a target? Are you focused? Do you have a routine? There's no right or wrong answer to it. It's just that, like, if you're going to play your best, then this is on you, not on me.
Yeah.
So what I look for in a golf club is, I said this a lot. I look for length and strength. I want something that's appropriate. I don't want too long because it's uncontrollable. I don't want too short because then that also might impact launch and spin and power and distance. But what I really look for is I'm really looking to get that club moving the right way for what you do, right? We can talk about, you know, we know plenty of players, right? High level players. I'm not going to look at that player and go, well, because you swing this way, this is what you have to have. I'm going to look at it and go, well, these are some of the options that I think that we're going to want to get into here. Right? I had one today as an example. Very, very strong player, right? Hits the 8-iron like 175 yards.
Excuse me?
Well, but so we have an issue because backing off on that is a timing issue.
Yeah, okay. Becomes difficult.
So then if we go the other way, I said, well, what if we put the heaviest, stiffest shaft? And then we do in that same club head, oh, this doesn't move all over the place. This doesn't go quite as far. But now you're hitting in the middle of the face because before it was a little bit lighter. It was an extra stiff, but it was a lighter. Get around 115, 120. Did you get
KBS 2 or 130Xs?
Yeah, that's what we went to.
That's what I'm in. Because, I don't have my 8-iron 175, but yeah. 160.
Well, he doesn't now, but the point was that as an example is like that shaft, right? So in my mind, I'm going, this is an extremely stiff shaft, and there's certain parts of the shaft that are very, very stiff, right? So there's not a lot of feel. There's not a lot of give as it's moving. So when we start looking at that, that's why I look at it and I'm saying, okay, let's try this, right? So from a fitting perspective, a lot of it is like people come in where they'll come in with graphite and they won't believe that they hit the ball better with steel. Whoa, you know, I'm too old or I don't swing too fast. Well, number one, you've heard this from all of our guys. Age has nothing to do with it. That golf ball and that club have no idea how old you are, tall you are, fast you are. They have so we've got to find the right fit. Well, that right fit is usually narrowed down just based on a couple of things. Make sure that we fit in terms of the dimensions, right? So we talk about length, that can be lie, that's definitely loft.
Yep.
And then let's make sure that we have an appropriate shaft. Now, you get someone who comes in and we say, this is one that I think is amazing right now. Is we say, oh, I got an outside to in swing, right? I'm over the top. You watch this from now on, and you're going to start to watch players that come outside, they get to the ball, and they go back outside.
Like outside to outside?
Yeah. They come down across and then go back out.
Yeah, that's how I try to field chipping, by the way.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Except if you're going to do it with your 7-iron, that's not going to work. You do it with your driver? Uh-uh, not happening.
Yeah.
But then you look at something like TrackMan where it says, you know, your path is out to in. When TrackMan's contact data, it's impact data. That's not telling me what happened after.
Sure.
That could be out to out. Well, it could be a totally different shaft, a totally different loft, and a totally different club that I go for just simply based on what I'm seeing in terms of patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that individual that you fit today hit his 8-iron 175? How many wedges did you guys end up talking about? I want to talk about a little bit about gapping because gapping's been on my mind lately, and I personally am moving to it'll technically be a 5-wedge set. I will have 4 wedges and a pitching wedge, and I'm removing my 4-iron because, one, I never hit it And two, just with how far I hit the driver, I find I want more optionality around the greens. It gives me more optionality between like the 80 and 120 to 130 yards that I tend to have a lot where I play. And I'm curious, especially now with pros that hit the ball so far, like it almost is a detriment to hit such a low iron so far, because now the gap's lower in your bag, which are considered, you know, scoring clubs like we just talked about. Are super big, and now you're having to have more swings with more clubs. And at least for somebody like me, in my mind, I go, I want to have less swings with those clubs. Like, right. I want to be able, right, to have maybe two swings with each club as opposed to having to have three. And so I'm curious where you guys landed, and then kind of, you know, if you're hitting your 8-iron 175, what, I mean, does he stop at 6-iron, 5-iron, and then what?
Yeah. Well, two things. One, he's got four actual wedges in the bag. And now we're...
And then pitching wedge? Or yes. He plays four wedges?
Yes, he actually has four wedges and then a pitching wedge.
So that's what I'm moving to.
Yeah. So let's describe this to start with, right? Because I look at this and I say, there's a big difference between a wedge and an iron.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have three wedges in your bag.
Are you talking to me right now, or are you saying in general?
Yeah, you.
I'm going to have four wedges in my bag.
So your pitching wedge is what?
I'm going to have a 60... A 56, a 52, a 48, and I'll have the T150s or the Strixon DXI7s that start at 44, the pitching wedges.
That's not a wedge.
Yeah, the P wedge isn't really a quote-unquote wedge.
It's an iron. And
it's a set wedge, which we've talked about before, is more of it's an iron.
And you need it there. Like, that's not, you're not supposed to, like, take something out of it, but... When I look at wedges, this is kind of where we put gap wedge on. We put, you know, mid wedge, send wedge, lob wedge. Like, we put wedge on everything. Mm-hmm. Not everything's a wedge.
Yeah.
If we look at it just from your 60, whatever style your 60 is, what kind of wedges are you going to play?
SM11s. The 60 is going to be a 6 degrees of bounce K grind. Yeah. And then starting at the 56, so 56, 52, 48, 44, are all the, I believe it starts at 14F, 12F, 10F, 8F.
Yeah.
And then once you get to the pitching wedge, it's basically the same kind of bounce and loft.
Yeah. So
4 degrees apart.
Especially when I'm in a fitting, one of the things that I'm going to look at with the gapping is I'm going to look at that. I'm going to say, if I've got a pitching wedge that's carrying, let's say 150, all right, and then all of a sudden we go to a wedge and the wedge is only carrying like 130, like the next wedge, whatever that wedge is, I might want to put an iron in. If I'm talking about distance.
An approach iron or an actual different iron.
I would say that more often than not, if you have more club head speed, you're much better off using an actual wedge. So that's generally going to have better spin numbers. And so even if you're off the fairway or you're in a situation where you might not be in an ideal location, having a wedge is usually going to be more accurate, right? We talk about like, what's the one thing that defines the tour level guys? Who can control their ball?
Yeah.
Well, what with what? Well, with anything. If you can control your golf ball and then you have, pretty decent putting skills, you'll win, you know?
Yeah. That's Scott, really, Scotty's pretty good at that.
You know? Yeah. That is part of it. So the other thing that I look at with that is, I look at the gapping is, like, it can be different depending on kind of like the way that you play. So, for instance, if you're the type of player that wants to play higher shots or lower shots, right, you're going to be able to, you could do those with different types of wedges. And so if you want more bump and run, then we start taking a look at the bounce on the bottom, or the bounce number and the grind for turf interaction. And we start talking about, all right, what's ideal spacing? So gapping is a really, really tough thing. And it's this is my opinion. And what I always say is, when I don't have to hit a 100% shot, right, like a quote-unquote soft 100% shot, all bets are off, right? When I have to hit something that's manufactured, like it's only a certain distance, it's only a certain percentage or swing. Because what you're entering into now is timing. And it becomes the timing, and you have to still make great contact. And one of the reasons that better players are better players is because they figured out, like in their practice routine, like we hear this all the time. If Tiger's going to go get ready for a tournament, he's going to hit 1,000 balls a day, and at least 500 or more of them are going to give you contact with a putter and a wedge.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, you have to be comfortable with it. And then when you, you get into that routine and you get that feel, it's all about feel.
Yeah.
And so we see these guys when they get to like the elite level guys, they'll get to the practice rounds and what do? Well, they're going to be a little bit off and hit a couple of different shots from a couple of different areas. That's where feel's a big part of it too. So I look at gapping as an interesting piece because, you know, how many times someone comes in and says, well, I need a wedge for my 100-yard shot, right? And I always go, I love going back to the old David Faraday clip with Phil Mickelson. Well, you might hit a 100-yard shot under certain conditions, but it's in the morning, it's cold, it won't go 100 yards. You get into the afternoon, it gets warm, it'll go 105.
Yeah,
it's wet, you know, you got... So everything plays into that. That's why I say is that as soon as contact is made, the environment takes over.
Yeah.
Right? And that... The thing to think about that too is like, it's not just the environment in the air, it's on the ground. So you take, for instance, something that, let's say you go out early in the morning and it's got some dew on the ground. Well, if something's spinning and there's water, what's it going to do? It's going to slide. It's not going to grab. So right away, your wedges are probably not going to spin like they are. Even if you had a dry ball and a dry wedge face, is like once it hits the ground, it's going to lose its spin. It's just going to skid.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, then we have to look at the conditions and you have to look at like the shot in and of itself. You talk about trying to, you know, hit a flop shot or a, you know, a high spinner. Well, if the ground's wet, yes, you can get it to smush. You can get it maybe to just drop down. But if you're talking about like really firm conditions, totally different, you know, results on something like that.
It's kind of fun to talk about the gappings in the bag, and especially now when you get to the, call it top of the bag, I'll say like once irons are done, wherever those are done for people. I mean, I play with guys that have three irons in the bag still. I don't know why, but they do. And there's people like me that just end at, you know, five iron, which for me is a 200-yard club. Like I, if I'm over 200, like I personally don't need to be hitting an iron. Like I just want a little bit more forgiveness. And in the past, you know, couple of years, it feels like we've moved into this world where like hybrids are dead and fairway woods are taking over a little bit. And I wanted to get your take on this, because I'd say 5 years ago, like hybrids were all the rage. Like I see people that play a bunch of hybrids, you know, they're replacing four irons with four hybrid and, you know, utility woods and all these things. And now it's like nine woods and seven woods and five woods. And, you know, you see guys like Tommy Fleetwood, who's got this like opened up nine wood. And he's like, man, I can use this on a bunch of different shots.
Yeah.
Are you fitting more people into fairway woods nowadays? Or am I just like kind of biased towards this like hybrids are dead notion?
No, I like to say this, between your driver and your longest iron, this is a very tricky situation, right? Like, so if you think about your irons, we pretty much have kind of call it the stock shot. Right, so we're planning on making that swing. We're planning on expecting that result. It's kind of the stock shot.
Mm-hmm.
That can go down into the wedges too, but the wedges get more tricky because you're half shots, quarter shots. You're talking about, you know, low. You're talking about trajectories getting low versus high, et cetera. But when you start talking about the longest iron, so what's the longest iron in your bag? You got a five.
Five iron, 200 yards.
So at that point, between the driver, this is... yeah, we can go anywhere. I mean, you could talk about driving irons. You could talk about or driving hybrids or talk about driving irons or hybrids or fairway woods. We can talk about, you know, changing the length. You talk about a good example. Callaway has what's called the Apex UW.
Mm-hmm.
It's a utility wood.
Yeah, they're sweet. Well, the only reason I don't game is because you can't adjust it. I wish you could adjust those. But
and, you know, when you order one off the tour truck, it's adjusted. Like, That's part of the tour truck. But what I look at with that is I say, okay, what do they do to it? Well, let's take the 19 degree as an example. What's the length of a five wood? It's the loft of a five wood.
Yeah.
It's a little bit smaller than a five wood.
But bigger than a hybrid kind of. Yeah.
Exactly. And then go through the book. Companies have different versions of these things. And one of the things that I try to look for as we talk about fitting, well, again, length and strength. Some people where the club continues to get too long have a harder time controlling that. And so it's a little easier when it's on a tee and I can maybe swing around, but you start to get into 3 woods, 5 woods, 7 woods, et cetera, and they get too far away from you, then there might be issues in terms of over or under and contact. So the other thing that happens, generally speaking, in the swing is once you get past that longest iron, you don't necessarily have a downward motion. And so we start talking about attack angle. So if I've got an upward attack angle on my 3 wood, I'm going to hit it thin. That could be a possibility. And I'm going to start to hit it maybe lower because I hit it thin. And you say, well, I need more loft. Well, loft is always great, but again, it has to be controllable.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, it's like, I know as a fact, it's like you talk to any of the fitters that we work with, they're all going to tell you the same thing. Going up, there are no hazards in the air, right? So number one, air resistance is a lot less than ground resistance. I understand you can roll something, right? But when you've got the water there, you've got a bunker there, you know, that you have a wet day, you're not rolling anything. So ball flight is really important in this. And what you get to is you get to the club that gives you the most success.
Sure.
And there's also, like, to that, you say, well, you could, with your strength and speed, carry a 4-iron. But
yeah,
it's situational. So you say, okay, well, maybe I have a hybrid or a fairway wood. That's great. You have to be able to keep, feel comfortable with the swing you've got and the result that you're going to get out of that. So I get people in on a constant basis where we're talking about, like, okay, was hybrid good or is fairway good? Zinger. Let's talk about Zinger. All right.
Gosh, shout out Zinger.
Well, you have to, yeah, because he does really, really well with long irons. He hits irons really well, right? You get into hybrid, not good. You get into fairway wood, then not good. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm basically going to get a 2-iron in his bag. Have fun. Go hit it. Like, you get to a certain point where you are what you are, and your swing is going to do what it does. And if this works really well, then we do that. But the other side of it becomes, well, if you keep trying to force something in because you think, well, I need this or I need that. And a lot of people do that. The PGA Tour gets you to the companies. The companies get you to their marketing division, and then the marketing division says, oh, you need higher? Well, you just need this club. And then you go, well, I don't swing that club well. So that's not the right club. So it can really be in any which direction. I find, like, with a couple of different things. One is let's talk about swing speed. So as we find, players that tend to get older lose swing speed, not necessarily because of strength, but because of balance, right? So as we lose balance, we're not able to move that club with balance or with strength as fast. So as that comes down, what happens is the ball velocity is a little bit slower and the ball flies lower. So now we're going to need more loft. At some point in your career, later on, you're not going to have a 3-wood in your bag. And you're going to have a 4-wood, and then it might be a 5-wood, and it could be a 7-wood. It's going to continue coming back.
Sure.
And as that happens, the same thing happens with irons. Well, a 5-iron's not enough now. It's too low. Well, then a 6-iron, well, that's too low. Then a 7. It keeps coming back. And so what we have to do is we have to find a couple of different things. One, we have to have ball speed, because ball speed creates lift. And the other part of it is we need to launch. So when we talk about the long part of the bag, wedges are easy, because wedges love to go up. They have loft. That's not a problem. But when we start talking about the long part of the bag, and especially for people that have lost swing speed, we are not going to carry a 3-iron or a 3-wood anymore. Because I want to hit it 400 yards, but I'm just with my driver, I'm just not doing it. It's not going to happen, right? People that normally come in will say, well, I'm shorter and shorter and shorter. Yes, that doesn't mean a different 3-wood. It means a different club.
Sure.
And that's, I think, kind of the other part to that too, is when you're going to come into a fitting, we're going to look at the options that are going to optimize what you do with that club. This is not, and I have this question a lot, like, well, okay, I'll just order the 3-wood and the 5-wood of that set. That's not the answer by a long
time. You're saying just to match it, because
that's what we've done for so long. I mean, Larry Bobka, he'll tell you, is like, back in the day, if you wanted to buy woods, you had to buy a set. You know, you're going to get the 3 of them, right? Now, he was in a different position where he was individualizing each of these, right? Like he'd be not only just playing, but building and working with. Well, he's working on the perfect tool. He's not working on a three wood for you. He's working on a club for you.
Yeah.
So I kind of say, like get past the idea of the number on the bottom of the club and just find a way to get the best out of that club. And at some point, that club's not going to get in the air. It's not going to go as far, and it's not going to be the right club in the bag. And I've had older players that come in where the swing speed starts to slow down, and we're putting 8 clubs in their bag, 10 clubs in their bag. Because, like, I always use my dad as a good example. My dad hits his 7 wood well. It's got loft. It goes. He can hit it straight. He can hit it solid. And he comes to me and says, well, I need a 5 wood because the 7 wood doesn't get there. And I'm like, that's not happening. The 5 wood's not getting there because we've already proven in testing and on the golf course, the 7 wood goes up and it goes farther. It goes straighter. So then, you know, a couple weeks later, well, how's the 5 wood working? Well, I don't hit it. It doesn't hit very well. Well, of course, I knew that. Right?
Lower and still goes the same. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, so, but sometimes we have to wrap our head around that idea. We don't necessarily need more clubs. We just have to find the right ones.
Do you have a take on what the perfect length of hitting a driver and then going down to your bottom length of club is? I was thinking about this the other day because there are some guys on tour that, in my opinion, I think almost hit it too far. Like it's a detriment. Like when you can move it, call it 360, and you're, let's say hypothetically, I haven't done the math on this, but that your gaps are now 30 yards between clubs or 25 yards between clubs. Do you have a take on like what the perfect distance is for driver and then like what it should be down to the wedge?
If I talk about like irons, if I talk about wedges, and again, we talk about stock shot, right?
Yeah. So say like what's the perfect stock 7 iron, perfect stock driver, perfect stock lowest wedge?
Yeah. What we talk about is somewhere between 10 to 15 yards from wedge to iron to iron to iron.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere around 15 to 20 in terms of woods. And okay. that gapping, and I'll give you a good example. If let's say, for instance, because this is kind of common for me in my fitting world, I've been blessed to work with, you know, high-end athletes and high-end golfers. I mean, I watched, you know, some of these kids today, you know, like you come in and they go, well, yeah, you know, it's tailing off at 370. Yeah, I bet it will be, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
But that's exactly one of the things. So you talk about the distance factor, right? That's where the mini driver has started to come into play a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was like, well, the driver's too far. Now what? And that's a huge gap there. And that can be a problem. Let's flip it the other way. What happens when the driver's 200 yards and now how do we gap it?
Yeah.
You can't fit 14 clubs in 200 yards.
Down 7-yard increments or something crazy.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it is really individualized to that. But like we were talking earlier, you know, I'll have a guy that plays professionally. He'll come in and hit the driver a mile. It's forever. You know, carries 320, goes about 350. Well, the problem is like, I don't really have a 3-wood that fits the gap. No, and you won't because the driver does go too far. And so we talk about like mini driver. Well, then I would lean back and I would talk about two things that Phil Mickelson did. And it was really kind of revolutionary. Now, he wasn't the first to do this kind of stuff. This stuff happened a long time ago. This is a conversation for Larry. But with what he's seen on tour, Phil won the Masters with 2 different drivers. And then he won
in the bag at the same time?
Absolutely.
Or, oh, really?
Absolutely.
I didn't know this.
He had one that was longer that he felt like he could hit more of a fade. He had one that felt like he had a driver that he could hit a fade and one that he could hit a
drive. So he was early on the whole driver, mini driver bit.
No, it was length because I think it was the same driver but different lofts and then different lengths.
Yeah.
So he pulled the 3-wood out. Well, the other side of that was he won the British without a driver. He had 2 3 woods because
that's crazy.
Yeah. And we look at it, and of course, you know, a lot of people have their opinions of Bryson, and we say, well, Bryson's crazy. Well, let's be honest. You can't win 2 US Opens with that level of talent and that swing and that kind of equipment without being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only crazy because it's not normal to you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so people ask, oh, well, you know, I really have putters. I have, you know, I have two putters, one for long, one for short. Great. Good for you. I like, if that works,
yeah,
go for it. 100%.
Got a lag putter and a short putter.
Oh, man. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Because you know as well as I do, you have putts that are like, man, I can make anything from short distance with this thing.
Yeah.
But it's really tough from the long putt.
Yep, 100%.
So then why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But what it does, though, is you look at that set, you're going to have to sacrifice something along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can carry 14 clubs. It's, you know, if you talk about tournaments and such. But what I look at is, say, there's so many different things that you can give a shot. One of the fittings I had today literally was, well, my 4-iron, my 4-hybrid, my 3-hybrid, my 3-wood, they all go the same distance. Yeah. Well, what am I going to do? But I don't know. Get like, just pick one or two of them.
Yeah. Pick the one that you like the most, you know? Get rid of the one that you like the least, and let's fill a different gap.
Yeah. And so what happens, and I'll go back to this, as the swing starts to slow down, the ball starts to fly lower. And when that happens, we start seeing distances that are very similar to it. So the one that goes up tends to have a little bit more spin.
It does,
it might carry the same, but maybe stop a little bit quicker. We talk about Fred Couples is a great example. You know, everyone's, oh, smooth Fred. Well, the reason that he went to, what is he got, a 7-iron might be the longest, maybe an 8-iron. He's got a bunch.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of hybrids, and him and John Daly, I think, does this.
Right. It was like, because what they're doing is they're putting tools in their bag that are going to give them the best possible result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this new phenomenon. It's like, it's the thing that I think is so awesome about like equipment now and like equipment junkies and like all this information out on, you know, social media and what different people do. And like, I follow all of the, you know, pages that will put in like what the winner had in their bag this week. And this year specifically has been like crazy different week over week. I mean, from top of the bag all the way down to putter. I mean, I looked at like Tom Kim's last week. It was like, it felt like it was the first time somebody had won a tournament on tour with like a mallet in the bag again, or sorry, a blade in the bag.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause we've been seeing just mallets like do everything. And it's like, oh wow, there's a blade actually winning on PGA Tour nowadays. It's crazy. And you look at somebody like Wyndham Clark, who 2 years ago, like literally couldn't hit a driver off the tee. And like now he's gotten rid of all of his equipment deals. I think he's like a free agent mostly through the bag, and is like playing really well, and he's just like changed everything, and like different equipment has worked a lot better for him now that he's done that. And I think I can't remember who I told this to, but I want to ask you the question of, do you think the money that these professionals get for playing equipment or having equipment deals outweighs how good they could be playing if they took what you just said about being able to play specific tools for specific things for their game and didn't care about the manufacturers and just played like the best possible mixed bag for them?
Yeah, I think with today's level of equipment, there's no bad equipment. When you're talking about the elite level, we're talking about all the major manufacturers. Then you start to throw in little ones. Let's give you a good example. How about Bryson? Bryson's kind of all over the map with the stuff. You might have this iron and this shaft and this driver and this, you know, he's got a bunch of stuff. But it's how he uses it that's unique. And we look at it and go, well, that's, you know, when's the last time somebody won two U.S. Opens with all graphite shafts? Never, right? Who was the first person to win every single, with every single shaft being graphite? Bryson. We wouldn't think it, but like this goes back, let's go back 100 years, 150 years. Yes, you could carry 14 clubs. Some people couldn't afford them. So when you start looking at the advent of the marketing and the amortizing of, you know, using my brand, yes, maybe with Tiger. Tiger can pretty much, he basically has hit the same equipment the same way from the same people, the same for his entire career, right? But then let's flip the script and go, how about Patrick Reed? Now he's got irons and some wedges, but he's kind of a, put some stuff in my bag. And I don't know where he sits now. I know he was really high in the DP World ranking, but
I think he's playing his way back onto the tour. He's pretty close.
He'll have that shot, but it, you look at, okay, let's talk about some of the other guys that are just getting into the tour. Let's talk about those guys. So do they have full bags of everything? No. And even to that, does Scottie Scheffler have a full bag of everything TaylorMade top to bottom?
No, because I think he still plays his whatever his longest iron is something different, isn't it?
No, it's a TaylorMade in that one. But he carries a Vokey.
Oh, yeah, his wedges are Vokeys. Yeah, that's right.
Rory carries a Vokey.
Yeah.
Right? When you get comfortable with something and it works, you can't really depart from that. And so equipment contracts are very difficult. Most of the time, not always, but most of the time, they're pretty much everything except maybe we can get away with maybe a different driver or a different putter, right? Like to putter sometimes, putter or a wedge is sometimes kind of left off on that side. So we're going to
Just irons and woods, you're saying?
Yeah. Well, for a lot of the pros that I know too, is they might be on a contract where it says, hey, we're going to go 12 clubs, 13 clubs, right? So specifically, you know, so they'll have everything else that they normally play, but they might only have 12 clubs, so you can throw your own wedge or your own putter in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I always think like it'd be kind of fun to see, I don't know, Rory hit like a GTS3 that was just like maxed out for ball speed or something, or like GTS4 that was super low spin.
Well, and this doesn't have anything to do with what he's accomplished, but he accomplished a heck of a lot more early on with Titleist. And then into Nike.
Yeah.
I don't think he's accomplished less because he's at TaylorMade.
Yeah.
It's just those are the phases and the parts of golf. So if I said, all right, you have one company and one company only, top to bottom, I already know what you're going to say, and it starts with a T.
Well, which one, though?
So I think it's Titleist. Because if you start top to bottom with everything, I start with the ball.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
I've never hit the ball longer and straighter than this new left dash.
Yeah, it's a really good ball.
Never. I'm just hitting this going like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
So that's not, it's certainly not physical prowess. But
you're an athlete, Fitz.
But when you get down to the other part of it too, right? Like I'm still playing a TSR driver. Why? Because it's just optimized.
It works, yeah.
Because I can't get any better numbers with it. I'm not hitting it any farther than something else. I'm not hitting it straighter than something else.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the newer models. It just has to do with the fact, and this is where a lot of the players, you're talking about marketing, you're talking about the price tag. They're not playing with brand new equipment. They're playing with things that have been modified very specifically for what they like, what they do. And you look at like Fleetwood, wasn't Tommy using like the Tiger Woods irons for a long time? And then they just made him in
the TWs.
Yeah. Or maybe it was Scotty. I don't know. But they made him their own.
I actually think it was both.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember both of them. I think you are right with Tommy. Vaguely remember Scotty playing the TWs as well.
Yeah.
And I think Rory did too. And then they came out with the Roars prototype.
Right.
And then now it's the Roars.
Oh, I saw a set of those sitting at our warehouse.
Really?
Like, oh, they're brand new.
Are they sweet?
Yeah, I'd play them.
Are they actually his specs? I'd love to like look down and...
I think they are because like I'll have to double check because... I know he was playing a 7.0 rifle for quite a while. I mean, I think that's what he plays, but I don't know if these were 7.0s. That'd be
it is pretty cool to like, especially with the stuff you guys do, be able to play like the specs of a pro. Like I remember, it's probably two seasons ago, maybe early last season. I literally tried like the Spider that Scotty played.
Yeah,
length, grip. Yeah, like it was the Spider, so they did the thing like to his head and it was like, here's the putter that Scottie Scheffler like, you know, became a pretty good putter with
right
back when. And it was like kind of cool to be like, yeah, this is literally the exact putter. And it was good for a little bit. Now I'm in the broom, but it is kind of cool to see that aspect. And I would love to see like, what does Rory look down at? You know, like sometimes you look at, I mean, like Patrick Reed's wedge.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've been to the Ping Vault before. Have you been in the Ping Vault? Have you been down there?
About 5 or 6 times.
Well, do you know what I'm going to ask about Bubba Watson's wedges?
Oh, yeah.
And like, you wouldn't believe, like, when you grab that thing, how he uses it. Like, it is so, if I remember right, it's set like massively open. Like, they literally twisted it and then put the grip on so that when you grab the grip and you're holding it like normal,
yeah,
it literally looks wide open. And that's just how he played his wedges.
Yeah.
Like, this is what he looks down at. Like,
they have,
how do you even do that?
They have a bag that sits, a bag of his actual clubs. In other words, to spec. They weren't played by him, but they were all to spec. And gosh, I think it's like an oversized grip that goes to like sometimes 12 to 14 wraps. So
12 wraps.
Yeah. And then
it's crazy.
Yeah. And then like for the clubs themselves, yeah, you look down at it and you go, it's so flat, it's so wide open. And you're just like, I don't even like, I it doesn't comprehend. But again, I think if you look at that, how many majors did Bubba win?
Three? Two?
Two Masters.
That's it? He only won the two Masters?
Yeah, I don't. He's not a U.S. Open guy. I don't think he's a, no, he's not a British Open guy.
I guess three, because I guess two Masters, and I just assumed that he had won one. Yeah.
But you look at that and you go, listen.
Like, two. Both of the Masters, you're right. 2012 and 2014.
Again, we'd look at it and say, he's crazy. Because it's just so different, you know, and that's the whole point.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when we look at equipment and we see this, like, it's not what I would play, we go, well, how would someone play that? Right. It's like, well, this is what I like the look of. Oh my gosh, this is different. Well, of course it's different. It's not yours.
Yeah.
I have some of the Tiger Woods wedges right now, the TW TaylorMade's.
I didn't know that he had wedges. Mm-hmm. This is going to sound weird. I'm going to ask, are they basically like Titleist wedges put in TaylorMade? Because the TaylorMade wedges to me look very TaylorMade-y. Like they have a, like, you know, a lot of wedges I feel like look the same. Like when I look at a TaylorMade, I'm like, oh, this is like a very unique, like the face and kind of like the material and the way that it comes off. Like,
right.
I was curious if maybe the TWs were a little bit more like the Titleist, but they're not. They're very much TaylorMade.
Yeah, they are TaylorMade, but they're also very, very similar to his Nikes, which were very similar to his Titleists, which are basically, it's the look, it's the feel, it's the grind, it's what he wants. I mean, again, let's go to Larry's the expert on this, right?
Well, to be fair, Larry's the expert on most things.
Pretty much. But one of the things about that, when I've had a difficult time because it's very different from what I've used personally for a while. So his 56 has the TW grind, if you will, the wedge has 11 degrees of bounce, and I'm pretty much 10, but it's got a pre-worn leading edge and then some trailing relief. And so it's like a really aggressive C grind with pre-worn leading edge. And I'm like, well, this is really cool. Well, then I start digging in and finding out, well, Tiger pretty much used that 56 for everything.
Really?
Yeah. So like it was just kind of the everything I'm going to do with a wedge is going to be with this. Now that of course doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that he didn't do other, you know, other things with
his
60 degree, but let's look at Tiger. He's got a pitching wedge, a 56 and a 60.
Is his pitching wedge set pitching wedge or is it a 44 degree wedge?
I would guess that it's probably 46, maybe 47 degree blade.
Blade. Yeah, so a wedge.
I'd call it a wedge.
It's not a set wedge.
Right. Well, so then all of a sudden you start talking about like, okay, there's 10 degrees aloft, then you go to 4 degrees aloft. Talk about gapping. One of the best iron players, one of the best wedge players, one of the best putters, arguably, of modern golf. And the gappings are way off.
Yeah. That's got to be really big gappings between those three.
Yeah.
Because you said the one was a 60.
Yeah.
And then one was a 56.
Yeah.
And then he goes to 46,
like you said, 7, six.
Call it 46. So yeah, 10 degrees between. Yeah, shit. That is really off.
Yeah. And so, but you look at it and you go like, but what did he get comfortable with? He got comfortable with making that 56 do everything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the other part to it. I look at when we have the conversation about like, okay, how many clubs do I really want? What's the gapping? What's the spacing? How much time do you have? How much time do you have to go practice this?
Yeah.
Because you can make one club do a lot of things. My advice, especially to the younger players as they're getting going, it's difficult when you get a little bit more aged, as you talk about maybe the 20s into the 30s and you start getting into the 40s. Like, you got what you got. You're going to do what you do. But if you're young enough yet, master a swing and then use it multiple ways. So here's what I mean by that. I make one move at the ball, but then I change where the ball is. I change ball position.
Yeah.
I don't try to change my move. So master the move and then change the ball position. Change what you do with it.
That's what Scott Fawcett with Decade says.
He's like,
quit trying to work the ball both ways. Like, you can change ball position a little bit and there, but
yeah, you move it up forward, you close it quicker, you move it back, it's open. Like
that's
not going to happen to every single person. But like, if I do something and I do it really well, and we've played, I have a good swing. It's solid.
Yeah.
I pretty much know where it's going to go.
Hit it straight, man.
And so with that, I'm not looking to try to get more out of that. If I have a specific shot where I look at a fade or a draw to that, I'm not really good at a fade because I really like to get power and turn it over.
Sure.
So with that being said, I look at that and I say, okay, maybe I'm going to drop down a club, add some more height, and then turn it over. So it goes higher, maybe a little bit faster, and then it turns over. So so I look at that and I say, I'm just trying to kind of bring together the idea of what it is that you do really well, and what do we need to try to, try to find something that fits in that space. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while since we played. So I think, let's not even text him. Let's just assume that Zinger is going to listen to this.
Yes.
The day it comes out, he's going to listen all the way to the end because whenever you and I talk, we always have great conversation and it's always awesome. So Zinger's going to listen to this all the way to the end. And then we're going to assume that he's going to text us, put us in a group chat, and put together a round for us to go and play golf together before the end of the season.
Yeah, that'd be good. He really wants to play the North Course.
I think we can make that happen. Has he not played it? Have you played it yet?
No.
You haven't played it yet?
Well, you know, I have this new job, 4 second swing at this little course.
Yeah, not too far from us.
No, it's actually just south, I think.
It's in like the Cub Foods parking lot.
Yeah,
south. Right behind it.
Right, something like that.
Hey, Hazeltine, you're wearing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I am.
Awesome, awesome gig for you there too, by the way.
Thank you. What kind of happened at Second Swing is like we're always trying to figure out like how can we, I don't want to say push the envelope to this, but how can we make the experience better?
Yeah.
So one of the things that we did was we partnered with Hazeltine and we're using a space in their new golf performance center. It's for member fittings, but on Mondays when non-member events and things like that are happening, we are allowed the opportunity to bring in non-members. We have the ability to hit, we're indoors, we can roll the door up, the screen up, we can hit out, we're going to have grass turf, we're going to be able to hit on, you know, outside, real hit, real shot.
Yeah. Opportunity. Which is awesome, by the way, like takes just the fitting experience to the next level, right? When you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of the times people say, well, I don't like indoors. I understand, but the variables are limited. It's like we limit our variables.
Yeah.
I got flat. I got air conditioned. Like today it's like 90
something. Yeah. Everything's going to change when you're swinging in 97 degree heat. You got maybe 15 minutes and you're cashed.
Yeah. And we also talk about like, well, I need a good hitting surface. I can't just go out there and just like start picking around between divots and things.
Yeah.
And so that's an opportunity. The best way to do that right now is to get a hold of me with my email at Second Swing. It's Tyler, Tyler.Fitzel at secondswing.com. It's the number 2 and then
ndswing. I'll put it in the description so people can find it.
Yeah. And the biggest thing to that is like, we want to be able to get that, experience for players in this area, which we've had some really nice opportunities before. We talk about like Rush Creek's kind of had their outdoor and they're back to the outdoor fittings with another company on that, which is great. So there's opportunities to do that. We talk about some of the other companies that, you know, kind of tour around. Think about it like this. We're going to go to a demo day, but I have every option from every club.
Sweet. It's like,
right?
It's the best thing you could ask for.
So there's kind of the variables get limited, right? It's raining outside. That's fine. That's okay. We're inside. We can hit out. We can see ball flight. Trackman works that way too. You know, so like I said to some people is, oh, I can't do a fitting unless I'm outside. Well, so then what do you do when it's 40 miles an hour across?
Yeah, have fun.
Like what? Like
you can only do a fitting when it's 75 degrees, perfect weather, which by the way, isn't how you play golf normally. It's especially here in Minnesota.
Yeah. So, it's new opportunity for us at Second Swing. It's a great opportunity. It highlights, you can talk with some of the members. If you come across any of their members, like it's given us another opportunity to share the experience. And what fitting comes down to is the experience. I like to say it's a conversation. We have to start that conversation.
Yeah.
There's not right or wrong with it. It's not good or bad with it. It's like we have to start down that road. It never ends because we always change. We're never the same. And so, you know, when we might, you know, get together in a month and you might say, well, I never even thought of that club.
Yeah.
And
which happens for me frequently, by the way, to be fair, to be fair.
Yeah. So
always a pleasure, Tyler. I appreciate you coming on. Yeah. I'll make sure your email is in the description. People, if they're fortunate enough to be able to come see Hazeltine on a Monday or something. Yeah. And it's always good to see you when you are in store, which is less and less nowadays, but it is good to see you.
It is. And what I like to say is keep your grooves clean and stay razor sharp.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
You're welcome.